There's a saying or a song, rain, rain, go away, come back another day. Well, this week on Taking Care of Business, we've got the main man, the MD, Sunny Ridgewa, who is the MD of Benepul. Welcome, mate.
Thanks for having me.
Very pertinent that you're actually on this podcast. We are filming on the 1st of May, so we are Wednesday, 1st of May. 2 weeks ago, we had an interesting few days, didn't we? We had tremendous amounts of rain. I think from the news stories, they were saying 6 months worth of London rain in several days. And guess what? The joy. We've got apparently a bit more rain over the next couple of days.
So they say, yeah.
So come to Dubai, Habibi, come to Dubai, you'll get the rain. So, mate, thank you very much for coming and joining me on the podcast. Believe it or not, we've had a huge number of requests. People just really want to touch on this subject. So you are from a company called Benepul. Just tell us a little bit about the company and what you do there, and then we'll touch on a little bit about how, you know, how it works in the podcast.
Sure. So Benepul comes from benefits and people.
Okay.
Very clever. And we've been around for about 12 years now, specializing in corporate insurance risks for all lines of insurance you can think of. So rather than retail lines, which is individual insurance, we insure companies. Do a lot in the healthcare space. We do a lot of corporate health and wellness with ourselves in-house and with various partners. And then we just help businesses kind of understand what is their risk. Are they adequately covered? Are there areas where there's maybe overlap? They don't need as much cover. And more often than not, areas where there's gaps. So how can we plug in those gaps and make their company's watertight, excuse the pun.
Oh, yeah, it's a good one. So we've asked you to come on because obviously Sunny's expertise is mostly from the commercial side of things, but you have a lot of friends and contacts, I would imagine, across the insurance sector as a whole. Insurance has been quite a overly used word across all media publications the last few weeks. There's a lot of people have been affected by the floods and the rains. So, you know, I've seen some stuff on social media where, you know, poor people have been in their homes and, you know, water up to, you know, halfway of the house. You've seen cars. We've talked off camera about, you know, certain cars floating down the middle of the street. From what you've heard in the, you know, around in your sector, what is the scale of the damage? What, you know, what are we looking at here? So, you know, we see a lot of cars that potentially could have been written off, or a lot of damage. What have you heard just through the grapevine?
Sure. So, literally right in the middle of the storm, we were getting calls from, you know, business owners, CEOs that generally have done well for themselves. They've got expensive toys, you know, be it a nice car or a nice home they've just had renovated, and there's water gushing through the ceiling. What do I do? Am I covered? Do I have anything to worry about? So there was a lot of that initial panic of sets in of, okay, what now? You hope never to use your insurance, right? If you don't, it's probably the most expensive piece of paper you're ever going to own. Mm-hmm. When you do need it, it's the best money you've ever spent. So there was an initial flood of, probably a bad pun again, not intentional, a lot of calls coming in. My car's damaged, what do I do? Because the important thing is, when you do have a claim, whether it's home, motor, business, whatever it may be, it's really important to register that claim as soon as possible.
Yeah.
Now, if you're unable to, because you are underwater at home, can't, you know, get your phone charge is not working, your electric's blown, and you can't do it, you do it as soon as you can. Same with vehicles. You know, people are out of the country. They don't know if their car's underwater or not. They might have a neighbor. They might have a friend. Lots of different scenarios. But you register the claim as soon as you can. So just after 48 hours, we were speaking to, we work with all the major insurers. I would say we work with all the reputable insurers. There are 60 insurers, more or less, in the UAE market.
60,
more or less. There's a few might be added each year. There might be one or two that exit the market. But at any given time, there's around 60 insurers, licensed insurers in the UAE. And we probably work with about half of those. The half we don't work with, I should probably rephrase that, actually. There are some insurers we don't work with because we don't believe them to be reputable. Either we've seen it firsthand, there's a lot of challenges around paying claims, or we've heard from very sort of worthy sources that we had an absolute nightmare, and we're just never going to put our clients in that position. Yeah, sure. So we work with the more reputable insurers, the larger insurers. speaking to our insurance partners in the first few days, within 48 hours, estimates were, look, there's probably going to be 10,000 write-offs here. The amount of cars we're seeing either completely underwater, and there's lots of social media videos and memes and clips, and there were taxis, and you see the taxi lights showing. There was a guy who decided, oh, I've got a truck, I'll get through this deep water.
Yeah.
2 minutes later, he's had to be rescued by his friends, window broken, and you name it. And I think there's a message there as well, and that's not to put yourself in harm's way, and certainly don't be caught on camera.
Yeah, of course.
Doing it. Insurance company, I'm sure they're going to have something to say about paying that claim. A week later, that number has multiplied 7, 8, 10-fold, and now they think there could be 100,000 claims and maybe 50% of those write-offs. But they don't know if we had one the other day, a client with Rolls-Royce. It's a few million dirhams. And the initial thought was it definitely could be a write-off, because Rolls-Royce don't generally repair flooded engines.
Right.
And it all depends how badly flooded is the engine. If it's repairable, it's going to be expensive.
Yeah.
And with write-offs, once the estimated loss is more than 50% the value of the vehicle, or the value of the sum insured of the vehicle, then they just say, okay, we're going to write this vehicle off. We'll pay you what you've insured your vehicle for, or the relevant amount.
Yeah, sure.
Pro rata depreciation, but you pay, you know, let's say 6 months into the policy, there'll be some depreciation, and they'll pay you the balance.
Okay.
And then they'll sell the car to a salvage yard or an auction company and try to recover some of that cost. But that's, you know, not for us to worry about. That's for the insurance company, but for you. Those write-off estimates, they could be accurate. We don't know. It's still a bit too early. I think we'll learn a lot more in the coming weeks and months just how bad this has been.
So them 100,000 write-offs, again...
Sorry, 100,000 claims.
Potential claims that could be write-offs.
Mm.
How the hell are they going to have loss adjusters, enough loss adjusters to service all of these inquiries to find out and establish, one, to get through them all first and foremost, and two, to, you know... Whether it's going to be a claim, a suitable claim, how long might that take?
So it's a great question. So there's a number of very large reputable loss adjusters in the country. So the ones we see a lot of the insurers use are Sedgwick, McLaren. There's a few others as well. I won't name them all. It's dependent on when the case comes in and where they are. So I had a call the other day. There was a claim on a Friday. We've had a leak on the property on the Palm. It's a big property on one of the fronds, and their pump room has flooded.
Right.
We're going to try and repair it ourselves, but before I engage, we need to get this back up and running as soon as possible. Before I engage anyone, you know, does the insurance company need to come see it? My answer was ideally yes. We lodged the claim on a Friday afternoon. Saturday morning, I got a call from the loss adjuster saying, "Listen, I'm on the Palm this morning. Is the client available? And we'll go and see it today." My CEO, her house was underwater. She lives in Dubai Investment Park. She had a few inches of water on the ground floor, in the living room, in the kitchen. It was quite bad.
Yeah,
their vehicles outside were submerged, one of which completely given up the ghost. The other one is operational. It's a Defender, so they tend to...
Come on, the Defenders.
They work well. indestructible. And the road was flooded. But we couldn't get an adjuster to the property. So until the water died down, unless, you know, the loss adjuster is going to start being airdropped by helicopter or going around on speedboats. And I don't know if you heard, there was a case in, I think it was Jumeirah Islands, where there was an elderly man who had diabetes and had some pets at home, didn't want to leave the pets. And the only way they could get to him was using a boat.
Wow.
Which is
unbelievable.
Yeah.
I've got a question just while we're talking about this particular thing. So that your CEO that was underwater couldn't get our suggestion to her. When you said at the start of the meeting about lodging a claim as soon as you can, does it make a difference to a claim being successful or not? If you lodge, let's say for her example, she couldn't register a claim for, I don't know, let's call it a week or anyone to come and see it. Does it make a difference potentially?
So my advice is always lodge a claim as soon as you can.
Yeah.
So which they did. Yes, obviously, okay. She's calling me and her PA. Her PA called me saying, "Listen, we've got some damage here. What do we do? We need to let the insurer know." It was the loss adjuster that took a week to get there because of access to the home. What could change over that period is that the extent of the loss on day one might be different on day five.
Okay.
So you don't know necessarily the full extent of the damage. You know, your garden's flooded. You think, okay, water goes down, the garden will recover.
Yeah.
But actually then it's once the water does subside where you then say, okay, well, the AstroTurf is completely ruined and needs replacing. Or there might be other, you know, patio furniture, for example, that is very capable of withstanding some rain.
Yeah.
But when it's been underwater for 3 days, for 4 days, it's probably ruined. So that period of time that passes will determine how severe the damage is.
What about delaying the request, the claim? So let's say, hypothetically, in touch wood, there's going to be rain in the next couple of days, but hopefully it's not anywhere near as what it was a couple of weeks ago.
Hope not.
I leave it a week after the event. Make a difference?
I think in the current climate, where there's such a high volume of claims, to your point about, you know, how do they cope? There's not enough loss adjusters. So some insurers have actually been flying in resources from other operations in the region.
Wow.
To cope with the volume of claims. One of the big national insurers, and they own about 30% of the market share when it comes to motor.
Yep.
They can't cope with the volume of claims. So they've engaged three independent outside parties to help facilitate the claim volume.
Okay.
I've forgotten your question. The week goes, does it?
When we register the claim, if it's delayed, let's say, for a week after the event, does it make a difference?
I think as long as you make the claim in good faith. There's no written rule. It must be made within 24 hours, but it's always encouraged to do so.
Okay.
I think people that were traveling, they wouldn't have known there was a loss until they got home.
Yeah.
Could have been a week or 2 weeks later, and then discovered their home's underwater or their car's underwater, whatever it may be. You register that claim at the earliest possible time.
Okay. Car insurance, I touched on that. What about home insurance? Because I did hear a frightening stat not so long ago, actually, where we don't know the actual numbers, but as little as 10% of homes have home insurance, or even probably smaller amount, contents insurance. Obviously, we've seen a huge number of homes, again, on social media, appear to be affected. Do we know the potential damage there, like, again, hearing through the grapevine? I appreciate it's not your direct involvement with that, but have you heard what's happening there, the exposure there?
So we speak to insurers every day. We've got different insurers in our offices for different reasons, maybe to, you know, put in some face time with myself and the team. Maybe it might be to discuss specific cases where it might be a little bit contentious, or there might be some details that we need clarification on. There's lots of different reasons insurers are in office, but it has proved a good opportunity to have, you know, candid, off-the-record conversations around what they're seeing.
Mm-hmm.
And then we then compare notes. We speak to other insurers. We ask them the same questions. What they're all in agreement with is that they've never seen anything like it, both on a home and a motor basis. I think with motor, it affects absolutely everyone.
Yeah.
Unless your car is parked high up, or if you're in a multi-story car park and it's above the first floor, say, less likely to have any damage. You still have damage, but less likely. And where we've seen real multiple big losses on the motor, sorry, I'll come back to home, is things like the fleets. So there's, you know, luxury car hire companies that we insure, or rental car companies that we insure, or commercial businesses that we insure that have big commercial fleets, heavy vehicles, light vehicles, company cars. Then you're seeing multiple losses all at the same time. And the motor losses are expected to exceed $1 billion, just to give you an idea.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Is that, and that, that's both from a business side of things, but also typical residents that have got their own personal insurance. $1 billion.
$1 billion. That's just on motor claims alone.
Wow.
On the commercial side, we've seen some claims come in, 200,000, 500,000. We haven't seen any major claims yet.
Yeah.
If there were going to be any, we probably would have heard about them, but not necessarily. So, as I said, I think some companies are still in the stage where they're actually assessing what is the full extent of our damage here. We've had one client put in a claim here, we think it's 100,000 dirhams. 3 days later, that claim was 300,000 dirhams because they discovered, oh, actually, there's another facility that's been affected and we've lost some stock, and, you know, there's different scenarios. On home, you say 10%. I'm surprised it's as much as that. I've been here for 12 years. It's always been a very low number compared to other countries. I think there's a complacency as a Dubai expat. I'm using Dubai, not the whole country, but as a Dubai British expat, I think there's a lot of comfort and complacency. You know, we're not exposed to the same threats we are in the UK, where it's constantly raining.
Yes.
So flood is more prominent. If you live near a river or the coastline, where you're more susceptible to flooding. We don't have, you know, burglary and theft and vandalism to the same extent. It does exist. It's not unheard of, but it's not anywhere near the same level as the UK. But then, alternatively, you've got other risks. You know, we live in homes that are probably no more than 20 years old.
Yeah,
and
that's, we're not sure how long the test of time that will be.
Yeah.
With the sun damage or whatever.
If you compare it to Victorian London, these homes are 100 years old. More than 100 years old now. So you've got very old, dated plumbing, electrical systems. People modernise their properties, of course, but they're far more susceptible. Pipes freeze in the winter, mm-hmm. they burst, there's damage. So people are more aware and more likely to buy home and contents insurance in the UK versus here. I think the average expat, and not just Brits, but you know, Europe has a similar climate, but I think here, people that buy homes and have a mortgage, they have to have home insurance as part of the loan agreement with the bank.
Do you think disposable income here is also a fact as well? Where people think, if something's broke, I'll just fix it.
Potentially. I thought about this the other day. You know, if you've got a big plasma screen TV, whatever inch it is, you know, when they first come out 20 years ago, I can remember them coming. They were very expensive.
Yeah.
Now they seem to be incredibly affordable. Everyone's got a bigger and bigger TV.
Yeah.
So you can replace things very easily. And the other thing is, you're going to have an excess on your home policy. So if one of the kids does smash the TV, the excess might be similar or more than the actual cost of replacing the TV. So there probably is a little bit of comfort and complacency. But what happens with an event like last week, there was big heavy rain earlier in the year. You've been here 20 years. You know, you see the tower fires in the marina, yes, and JLT and everything else. It spikes people's interest. It suddenly brings something that's on my to-do list. It's probably not anywhere near the top of my to-do list, but it's something I need to get around to doing, insure my property. And all of a sudden there's a fire or there's a flood, and it gets bumped to the top of the list. So there's lots and lots of inquiries. We get the inquiries, we say, look, we don't do personal lines, but we can perhaps recommend you to someone who can help. We see it on the commercial side. This is, Sonny, we really need to look at business interruption insurance because we've not been able to operate for the last week or two. We've got to find alternative accommodation. There's lots of different reasons why people will suddenly, insurance becomes right at the forefront of their minds, and then a week later it's forgotten about and it dies, you know, the interest dies down.
The home insurance thing, well, I think last thing I'll say on this part is, actually, if I compare it to the UK insurance, it's very reasonable, right? I've got contents insurance where I live and also buildings insurance, and again, from memory, it doesn't seem particularly expensive. So I think my message to anyone would be, particularly with the last couple of weeks, is you know, for a couple of hundred dirhams a month, depending on the scale and the scope of the policy, just get yourself insured. We don't want to have another event of what we had where you potentially could be losing lots of you know, personal and fond items. So we recommend insurance, right? Home insurance and buildings insurance.
100%. You know, speak to your broker. Get online. There's lots of places you can buy, and it is, as you say, compared to other markets, it's very affordable at the moment. I think you know, we're going to see our motor premiums increase.
Lovely.
And home premiums. In other countries, the market's very segmented, meaning if you live in an old listed property with a thatched roof, your premium's going to be more than if you live in a newly built skyscraper in London, right? So here in the UA, typically there's not a huge segmentation, so it's based on property sum insured. Property value is what is the basis of the premium. I think now we're seeing that some communities are flooding more than others. Premiums may be charged accordingly to where you live. Are you in an area that's prone to flooding? Is your property built by a developer that is prone
to... Is that factored in prior to all of this happening, or do you think that would be a new...
No, so it hasn't been, historically hasn't been, but I think it might start to creep in.
Interesting.
And it would make sense, I think, to do so as well.
Interesting. So not just homes and vehicles were affected. Another thing which, you know, we were affected as a business, you know, we were not able to work for periods of time. Obviously, viewings weren't happening. I think if you ever look online also, there were a lot of malls which were, and shops within the malls which were hugely disrupted. Tell us a little bit about your involvement and really some cases that you can give me some information on, which, you know, their insurance helped their situation.
Sure. So malls are a great example. We insure a number of international and multinational companies, including some chains of retail stores, some chains of food and beverage businesses, you know, think say a famous fast food chain. So there's a few that we insure.
Yeah.
They will have, you know, what we call a multifaceted or multi-line policy. Sometimes it's called CGL, which is commercial general lines. And it has multiple areas of risk built into the policy. It's all encompassing.
Yeah.
So it'll be property or risk if there's damage to their property. There'll be third-party liability if you're a tenant within a mall. It does depend who owns the mall, but obviously we know the big players in the mall space. They will tend to ensure that their tenants have very comprehensive insurance policies, because it's not just if our tenant causes damage to their own store. It's if you're a food and beverage company or a restaurant and you're working with Naked Flames, and you cause a fire that then wipes out half of the mall, you need to have very comprehensive insurance in place. With the rains, what we saw is, and there's lots of social media videos doing the rounds where there's water just gushing into the malls. In fact, I think Dubai Hills Mall was unscathed, maybe because it's newly built.
Yeah.
And a lot of people were taking refuge. So the little people that live in sort of that area of Dubai got as far as Dubai Hills Mall and said, right, well, I'm gonna camp here until until the storm passes.
Wow.
I mean, yeah, we had clients that slept in their car overnight, couldn't move, gridlock.
Wild.
And using the same example, we had some clients where their staff couldn't get out the mall. They were stuck in the mall. They had to sleep in.
Yeah, I've heard cases of people having to stay overnight or sometimes a couple of days in a supermarket chain, for argument's sake, which is, when you come to think about it, it's a bit crazy, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
So any particular examples? So let's say one of these malls which are flooded and you were insured, what sort of insurance would they have? How would that help?
Sure. Well, I think probably best I don't name the specific
one. No, of course not. Okay. No, please don't.
But using the same example, so with a client with multiple locations. So you're insuring all of the locations. They're all mentioned on the policy. And the reality is it's unlikely that every single, if you've got 40 locations or 100 locations, it's very unlikely there's going to be a loss occurred at each location simultaneously, right? So again, we're going back to premium versus potential loss. It's a no-brainer. It's, you know, it's an insignificant cost to protect your business.
Yeah.
And in that case, each store, as an example, will have its own P&L. It'll have its own projected income, profit, rent, salaries, all of these things. So when we look at a business interruption claim, it'll be, okay, which location was affected and how was that location affected? Let's say the mall shuts down for 2 days. They need to do cleanup. They need to, you know, clean the flood damage, the leaks, the water damage, whatever it may be. Again, if it's food and beverage, if it's a restaurant, there's a lot of process that has to be followed, not just the cleanup, but then needs to be signed off to make sure it's fit for purpose and okay to open. What's the loss of revenue over those period of days? Was there any stock loss? So, you know, retail, your fashion outlet, the stock is ruined. It's not something you can sell again. If it's food, if you're a meat company and you've got commercial freezers and there's no water penetration, you're okay. The meat's frozen.
Yeah.
If it's a fresh food business and you've got food that's being chilled, it's fast-moving consumable goods. It probably needs to be in and out within 48 hours, let's say. So by it not being able to be sent to their suppliers, hotels, restaurants, whatever it may be, there's a lot of stock that's going to perish. And if it's high-end stuff with high values,
so a loss adjuster's role on from a business perspective, looking at a case of how much revenue is lost, is a lot longer process to understand the actual loss as opposed to a home insurance, car insurance, say this is the damage. It could be weeks, right?
Yeah, very much so. Okay. Very much so. And you have to validate, authenticate those statements as well. So if there's loss of income, for example, now you need to go back through, you know, audited financial statements to show that they did in fact earn that revenue historically.
Yeah.
And therefore this is a clean case, to put it in a way.
Okay. So I think again the message is better pool. You're the guys to make sure all businesses are protected. And obviously, there's all sorts of insurance, right, for businesses, not just loss of earnings. There's obviously different protections from suits and whatnot. There's lots of different ways you can have your business insured and protected.
Absolutely, yeah. So professional indemnity, directors and officers, these are called what we call financial lines. These are things that businesses should protect themselves, number one. But also, so should the owners, the directors, protect themselves and their assets, insulate their assets from the wider business. And that's where you have directors and officers insurance versus professional indemnity, which is protecting the business itself.
if someone's watching the podcast today and they have a business and they're thinking, oh, actually, I don't have a lot of insurance, where would one of your team members start with said person in terms of like just analysing the risk? Is it a case of just sitting down, having a chat and kind of spotting potential loopholes?
Exactly that. So yeah. we would generally go out to meet the client. Ideally, anyone listening, very welcome to come to our office. We've got a nice, not as nice as this, but we've got as your new offices, but we've got a nice office in Business Bay. Welcome to come and see the operation, have a cup of coffee, meet the team. They're all lovely. But we like to go and meet you because we want to get a sense for your business. You know, what is the facility? You'd be surprised. You know, when people say, come and have a look at our business and tell us what we're missing. I have said in the past, well, a fire alarm and a fire extinguisher would be a good start. And, you know, we joke, but how an insurer perceives the risk of your business, excuse me, and decides how much premium they're going to charge. If you look at a manufacturing facility in Jebel Ali or Dubai Investment Park, two neighbours next door to each other, and one has sprinklers, civil defence, automated civil defence link-up system, meaning once the fire alarm goes, the fire department are there, versus, you know, one where they leave the fire exit doors blocked by boxes and old furniture and stuff like that, that's viewed very, very differently. And it might sound simple and obvious, but that's where a good insurance broker will come and not just ask you, okay, how much are you paying? We can save you money. It's how can we make sure your business is adequately protected? Okay. We'll always try and find you the best price possible because we're not looking for your business for 1 year. We're looking to be your partner for many, many years to come. You know, people often say, well, we need to look around, shop around for new suppliers. I said, well, we're not your supplier. We're your
partner. What you do, right?
Yeah.
It's what you shop on behalf of the client.
Exactly. Yeah. The insurers are the suppliers and we're your partner. We're here to represent you in the market and speak to all the insurers and make sure we're getting the best deal possible. And more importantly, the protection that your business needs in case, you know, the heavens should open up.
Two more questions. So do you think health insurance will be impacted because of the last couple of weeks? I mean, who knows? You know, God forbid, everyone's okay, but do you think that could impact premiums moving forward? That's the first question. And then the second one's a little bit more controversial. Yeah, maybe you remember it. The government. It seems to be in the media they've applied a little bit of a pressure on insurers to say, you must pay. What do you know?
Okay. Two very good questions.
Yeah.
So let me start with the first question, which was...
Private medical insurance, would we see the premiums jump?
Yeah. So the reason I'm deliberating this, there's no straight answer. But some insurers don't do health insurance. Some insurers only do health insurance. So for an insurer like, and I'll name them, it's widely known. So for an insurer like a Bupa or Cigna or Allianz, in this region, they only do health insurance. So the losses incurred by motor, home and business shouldn't really impact their losses, their performance, and therefore our premiums.
Is that an on-purpose decision, though? Because obviously they haven't got multiple exposures then.
Not really. I mean, Bupa, historically, very well-known British insurer, been around for 100 years, that they only insure health. They only insure for health. They don't do any other insurance. They specialise in health insurance. So if it's your health, I think, you know, if possible, you deal with a specialist insurer.
Yeah.
However, the rains and the losses over the last couple of weeks, whilst it won't affect the premiums, there are many other factors that will. So, you know, we know healthcare is very expensive in this region. It's an entirely private healthcare system. The hospitals are all beautiful, fabulous buildings. Mm. You know, insuring them, there's an awful lot of value in those properties. And they'll be affected too, but there'll be storm, wind damage, rain damage.
So that'll be technically passed back down on the premiums potentially.
Potentially.
Interesting. That way.
The health inflation is a big problem in this part of the world. And I think, in fact, people not being able to leave their homes and go to hospitals for that week may actually drop traffic. The lower traffic going, people going to hospital could mean fewer claims. It could help, but I'm not sure it'll have an impact on your health insurance premiums next year.
So, what about government then? The government involvement... I think the government in general have been absolutely phenomenal in my time here, and particularly in the last 3-4 years, very hands-on and, you know, pro people. What have you heard on the ground? Because it seems like, and anecdotally, by the way, and this is not my professional opinion, it's just over the years gone by, a general insurer will tend to try and find every opportunity not to pay a claim. This is my an educated view, so take it as you will. But from what I've read, there is a bit of pressure from the government to say, you know, you need to kind of honour as much as you can.
So, okay. So, common misconception. Insurers will get out of paying claims if they can. So, I think the distinction is if there's a reason not to pay a claim, they won't.
Yeah.
It's a contract.
Not negligence or something.
Yeah.
Or something not documented.
Yeah. So first off, anyone with a home, motor, or any insurance policy, corporate policy, need to look at the terms and conditions. You know, and what's partly caused your question and the action from the government is that motor policies are quite confusing because every single motor insurance policy in the UAE, what's called the unified policy wording that's established by the insurance authority, which is now governed by the Central Bank of UAE, every single policy excludes natural disasters, floods, war, natural perils. So if you read that exclusion, you think, oh, well, my car's not insured. What most international or most reputable insurance companies do is they then write it back in as an extension that natural disasters, floods, perils, riots, civil unrest are covered.
Right.
So the extension supersedes the exclusion. Yeah. So as long as you've got the extension, you're good. Where there's a lot of confusion is people have read that the red writing, so it's often printed in red writing so you don't miss it, it's excluded floods.
Yeah.
And of course, you don't then read on to see if it's mentioned anywhere else as an extension. You just panic and assume the worst.
Mm.
You've then got, you know, lots of people on social media, people that aren't insurance professionals who may know something about insurance, who may not, making blanket statements. I mean, you've seen it all over social media. Oh, they're not going to pay you. You're not covered. So it then led, I believe, to the government saying, listen, this is not an opportunity for insurance companies to back out of paying claims. This is an opportunity for insurance companies to quash those misconceptions, stand up and do the right thing. People pay a lot of money in good faith that their insurance policy is there in case they ever need it. With motor insurance, whether you want it or not, it's mandatory. You have to have it.
Yeah.
And when you could be the safest driver in the world, but if a lorry rear-ends you because they're not paying attention or because it's rush hour traffic in anywhere in the world, but here in particular, then it's money well spent.
Yeah.
And I think what the government has done initially is like banks, insurance companies, give people a break. Well, until we understand the full extent of this damage, they've said you can have up to 6 months to pay your car loan repayments.
Yeah, I've seen that.
I think that's an amazing move. Yeah. I'm with you. I've not been here as long, but in 12 years, I think the government have been fantastic to promote this country as a safe, happy place to live and work. And insurance companies need to help that, not hinder that.
Yeah.
There are a lot of cars, unfortunately. Other Emirates, there were very large floods, tend to be perhaps lower income households. So the value of their vehicles aren't as much, and they have a tendency to maybe insure on a third party only basis.
Right.
Older vehicles too.
Would not be covered on that basis.
They wouldn't be covered for any
floods.
Public flooding. So if they're on the vehicles, if they're on the roads themselves, if they've caused the damage, they're not covered for their own vehicle. They would only be covered for damage they caused to someone else's vehicle or a third party. Where there is a bit of uncertainty is if you're parked in, say, a car park, an underground car park or a commercial car park, like a mall, for example,
yeah.
And damage occurs to your vehicle as a result of flooding to those premises. There's a grey area there that they might be able to claim against the property policy.
Mm-hmm.
But what you'll find more often than not in car parks is that we've all seen it, that disclaimer that says, you know, owners park at your own risk.
Yes.
Something happens to your vehicle. If someone scratches your dent, your car, it's not our fault. That's up to you.
Well, see, what I've learned working with you guys is probably best to work with a broker because a lot of the interpretations and wording sometimes can be broken down to this is, you know, where you're covered, this is where you're not, which is where you guys have come and helped in, and we appreciate all the help you've done with us over the last couple of years. For anyone watching, we are a day out from potential rain and touch wood, it's just here and gone. But again, our advice would be protect yourself, stay insured, stay safe. Sonny, mate, thank you so much for your help, and hopefully you don't have too many claims to deal with over the next week or so.
Thanks very much.
Cheers, mate.
For having us.
Thank you. Cheers.